Our next speaker is Nan B, who hit bottom and walked into her first OA meeting in November 1996. She has remained in OA and practiced imperfect abstinence since then. During that time, she has had several sponsors and has been a sponsor. She has held service positions in groups and an intergroup. When time allows, she enjoys hiking and biking, sewing and yarn crafting, reading, and learning to play the fiddle. Get out your earplugs. Please do not have your earplugs in right now. Go ahead, Nan.
Hi, everybody. So are we recording audio only? Joy, I'm curious.
I am muted. I'm unmuted now. If it is both video and audio, we will have the audio on the website.
Okay, great. So I'm Nan. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I feel a little embarrassed now that Joy gave my little bio there. And after hearing Donna's wonderful share, Donna, I really appreciated your talking about being so in the present and talking about current issues. So now my fear is I'm not going to do it right, because I kind of framed my talk more around what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I guess I'm going to tell you a bit more of my story, because that's how I've learned to be a speaker in 12-step programs. So I grew up in an alcoholic family. My father was an alcoholic, and I tell people he was drunk until I was 13 years old. I only have a couple of memories of him being sober during my childhood. And during that time, I think I learned to use food as a tranquilizer. I don't really ever remember not eating compulsively. And there were no boundaries. You know, there was a lot of chaos in my home, and I often felt neglected, even though, you know, my mother gave us everything that we needed. But at the same time, I sometimes felt neglected, and there were no boundaries around food. You know, we could have, I mean, the kitchen was just open. You could go in and eat whenever you wanted to. I mean, we had regular meals, but you could eat between meals. It didn't, there were no boundaries. I would go to childhood friends' homes, and they couldn't eat between meals. And I was just astounded. It's like, really? You can't go in the kitchen and just get what you want? But there were no boundaries in my house. And then my mom also, I think, showed her love and tried to elevate her own esteem through her culinary skills, because she had excellent culinary skills. And she always had a lot of things, sweet things that she made around for us. And you were supposed to enjoy all that stuff, but at the same time, it was like a mortal sin if you were to gain weight or be overweight. And I think I always tended to be overweight. So it was very, the whole message around food was very confusing in my growing up years. And as I matured, probably hitting around junior high school, I started a cycle of yo-yo dieting. So I would gain weight because I would overeat, and then I would go on some kind of crash diet and lose weight. So I started that yo-yoing. So I guess I could qualify as bulimic, although I've never really identified myself as that, because I thought, well, I'm not that. I never threw up. But we know there are a whole range of disordered eating. And I also had a couple of sisters who there was a lot of sibling rivalry with, and they called me fat all the time when I was growing up. And I think I kind of had a self-fulfilling prophecy, because that is what I became. You know, eventually I was never really grossly overweight, maybe 30 pounds at most, because I would diet to take it off, and then I would gain it back. And so finally, in 1996, after years of struggling, I hit my bottom on a Halloween night. And a lot of you have heard this story, but I'll tell it again. My husband was working in a situation where he had to spend the night just in case there was a crisis. And I could stay at the workplace with him if I wanted to. So it was Halloween. I said, well, let's get some treats. We'll watch a scary movie. And so, you know, he's compulsive too. So he didn't buy like a bag of treats. He bought a bucket of stuff. And I had a really hard time not eating all of that compulsively. But I contained myself. The next morning, I came home. I brought all our stuff home, including the bucket of stuff. And I ate most of it before he got home. When he got home, he said, oh, my gosh, I didn't know we put such a dent in that. And I said, we didn't. And I just completely fell apart. And with his help, I was able to make the call to OA, where I knew I belonged for a very long time, but I wasn't willing to go there and walk through the doors. So I finally started my journey in OA. And, you know, when I got to OA, I had been in a 12-step program to deal with my family of origin issues for quite a while. So I thought I knew something about higher power. I thought I knew something about the first three steps, you know, taking that waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I thought I knew how to turn it over, but I had never turned over my food. And once I got into OA, one day at a time took on a whole new meaning. And I really had to learn to trust my higher power in a whole new way. And I really found a much deeper connection and a much deeper trust in a higher power, because it was even more of a lifeline. And, you know, there's a quote in the Voices of Recovery that says, pray to God, but continue to row to shore. And so that's kind of what I've learned in OA. I need to trust God, but I still have to take some action. I can't just sit back and think that God's going to do everything for me or take the fork out of my mouth. I have to take action. And that same reading says, surrender does not mean that I take no action. It means that I take action and surrender the results. So I do have to do some footwork in order to stay abstinent. And abstinence is, during the sharing, I was reminded, one of my sponsors used to say, abstinence is abstinence from compulsive overeating, but also from negative thinking. And that is something I can still struggle with. I don't know, somehow I'm just, that negativity is kind of ingrained in me. And when, you know, sometimes I'll be talking to my husband, he'll have an idea, and immediately I'll say why I think it won't work or what the downside is. And, you know, it's a character defect. I work on that. I really try to turn that over, but it still comes up. And thinking about the negative thinking, you know, brings me to thinking about cleaning house. And as I mentioned, or Joy mentioned, I've had a lot of different sponsors in OA. One of them died, a couple of them have left program, one moved away. In fact, my current sponsor does not live here right now, and we have continued a successful relationship on the phone, although she's aging and starting to have some health problems. So I know at some point I'll have to have yet another sponsor. But it was, you know, with the help of sponsors that I was able to go through the steps. And that's, for me, is where the recovery really was doing the step work. And I had made some amends, mostly to my immediate family members in the other program, but I had a lot more to do. And especially with my sisters, the sisters, some of you that know me know I fondly refer to them as the evil twins. They are twins. And when we were growing up, it was always two against one. And every time I thought about making amends to them, because I had recognized, you know, I certainly played a part in our relationship. But every time I thought about making amends, all I could think of was what they did to me. Finally, I was able to get through that, work through my resentments, come to some sort of forgiveness enough to be able to make amends to them. And I guess I didn't have the courage to do it face to face. And I wrote them letters. They never acknowledged the letter. They never said anything. We never discussed it. But our relationship changed. And today we have a fairly decent relationship. But I also had to learn things. You know, I had to learn about more boundaries, that they're not always the right people to share my intimate stuff with. I need to share that with my sponsors and with other OA friends who understand, and with people in program who know how to just listen and not give me advice. And the other thing that really helped me in cleaning house was doing a sexual inventory, which I had never done. And my first OA sponsor insisted that I do that. Now, I did not want to do that, but with her help, I was able to do it, and it really helped me forgive myself and see where I needed to take responsibility and see where I may have been a victim, but it really helped to clear away a lot of the wreckage of my past, because I had a very confused idea about love and sex and relationships. So one of the things in my cleaning house I discovered was that so much of my overeating behavior and using food to cope was because I was lonely. And some of that was learned in childhood in the alcoholic home, you know, using food as a tranquilizer, using it to soothe my loneliness, being taught that love, you know, that food is love. But, you know, in The Invitation to You, it says the cause of our disease isn't important. But for me, it has been important to sort out some of the roots of my feelings so I can let them go and let go of my resentments. And then that helped me to recognize my emotional triggers, so I don't have to act on them. And another reading in Voices of Recovery says, cravings are not commands and relapse is not inevitable. And I know, you know, I've heard people say, well, relapse is part of recovery, but I don't believe that. And I heard someone in the helping profession say one time, relapse is not part of recovery. Relapse is part of relapse. Relapse is part of the disease. And that's kind of what I believe. I don't think relapse is inevitable. But we have to be vigilant and do those things we don't want to do, like Donna was talking about. I have to do the daily reading and writing. And I have to truly believe that abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. I used to hear that a lot in meetings. I don't hear that in meetings as much as I used to. But I think that comes from that brochure, Before You Take That First Compulsive Bite. And that was one of the pieces of literature that I really held on to in the beginning. It really helped me a lot. And as I've been cleaning house, one of the things that came up for me was purpose. And there was a time a few years ago, I was really focused on purpose and what is my purpose? What what am I here for? And I even went through a course at the community college about looking for your purpose. And finally, I realized in the big book, it says our purpose is to trust, or it says something like, our purpose is to serve God and our fellows. And I was like, boy, that was simple. You know, my purpose is to serve God and my fellows. And I've been searching for some, I don't know what I was searching for. I thought it would be something way grander than that. So if I can keep that in mind, it really helps keep me on track. And I got in the habit of doing daily writing. I miss some days for sure, but it was at one of the workshops that I think Janice had conducted, where we had the jars full of words or phrases. And I went through two jars of words and phrases, writing about those. And then I went through the workbooks, questions that are associated with our daily readers. And I wasn't sure what to do this year. So I told my sponsor, I said, you know, I think I'm just going to write a daily letter to God and see what comes out. And she said, well, that sounds good. But did you thank him? Did you say thank you, higher power? So I think gratitude is really a large part of my recovery too. And my sponsor is really big on gratitude. She reminds me of that a lot. And I've told this story many times too, but years ago, I was just furious about something. I don't even remember what now, but I was furious. And someone said, well, why don't you think about what you're grateful for? And I'm like, grateful? How can I be grateful for that situation? And he said, I don't mean being grateful about what you're angry about. Think about other things that you're grateful for to change your focus. So that was my biggest lesson about gratitude. And the last part of the trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, I'm from Tennessee originally, and that's the volunteer state. But I was never a volunteer. I just wasn't a joiner. I was always a part from instead of a part of. I never raised my hand to participate. I don't know. I guess that was my fear, or thought I wasn't good enough, didn't think I could rise to the job. But somehow in 12-step programs, I learned to volunteer. And sometimes, I swear, especially early on, when we would be in a meeting or something and there would be a request for volunteers, my hand would just go up almost spontaneously. It was like higher power just grabbed that hand and pulled it up. And I would have said yes before I knew what I was doing. And then sometimes I would think, why did I do that? And sometimes I still think that. Why did I get myself into this? But I know it's through giving back that we're able to keep what we have. But I can't give away what I don't have. And it took me a while to be willing to sponsor people. When I first came into program, I was in a HOW meeting. And in that meeting, they wanted you to start sponsoring after you'd been through the third step. And I didn't feel comfortable. I felt like I needed to at least go through the fourth step before I could sponsor people. And a friend of mine in another meeting agreed. So I waited until I felt like I really had something to give. And eventually I did start sponsoring people. And at one point I became really burned out on sponsorship. I was sponsoring too many people. I didn't have time, you know, I wasn't doing a good job, and I was going on a trip, and I thought, I am so glad I'm not going to be talking to people during this time. And it was actually like a sabbatical. We took 2 months out. And what I learned was, how much I needed other people in the program and how much I needed sponsees, because I learned so much more from sponsoring people than I think they get from me. And that was a real lesson for me that, you know, it is a we program. I can't do it alone. And at the same time, as far as giving service, you know, service is important, but I also have had to learn to say no, because I can be a helpaholic thinking that I'm the only one that can do this. If not me, who's going to step up and do this? Well, I don't have to do it alone, and I don't have to go beyond my limits and stress myself to give service. You know, if I'm stressing, if I'm engaging in something that's causing more stress than good, that's not good for my recovery. And even my sponsor has said, you know, sometimes it's okay to say no. Sometimes it's appropriate. And I think that's taking care of myself. And I think taking care of ourselves is really what OA and the 12 steps teaches us. Because when I take good care of myself and learn to nourish myself with food instead of eating compulsively, you know, I'm learning to trust God with my life and my food. And when I take responsibility for my actions, it gives me self-esteem and I learn humility. And when I learn to be so less self-centered and have compassion for others and learn to help others, it helps me have more compassion for myself too. So, you know, as has been said, I've learned so much in this program and through the 12 steps, and it helps me in all areas of my life, not just managing my food and my emotions, my family relationships. It's helped me at work. I've learned how to speak in a group. I could never be before a group like this and talk. And it's helped me professionally. Sometimes I speak professionally at my professional groups, but I could have never done it without being in the 12-step programs. So it's really a way of life that gives me tools for living. And I just really appreciate you all listening and being here. And I too am really grateful for the strong OA community that we have here in Tucson. So thank you.